This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Back in February, just before stay-at-home orders, mask mandates, and scores of hospitalizations and deaths, we spent an hour on this show with Bobbi Banks. She's a leadership strategist and consultant with a background in epidemiology and public health. We talked about the business of medicine and the industry's history of racial inequity, as well as the work she's done to challenge those systems. Months into the COVID-19 crisis, we are inviting her back on the show to talk about how this pandemic has inspired her to create a new campaign. She's working to ensure that communities of color receive access to accurate public health information. Bobbi, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Anita. I'm excited to be back.
So I know that you heard about COVID-19 pretty early on from friends and others working in the field of epidemiology, and you have said that what you've seen has been your worst fears toppled over. Talk to me more about what you've seen from your perspective.
Absolutely. So I'm fortunate to have friends and colleagues who have been very close to the pandemic, both in medicine and epidemiology. And so in March, I saw this coming down the pike. And I know as an health equity researcher, someone who has training in epidemiology and in health behavior, that this is like many other diseases that we are fighting every day to make sure that we are addressing deeply rooted inequities. And so seeing that this was a highly infectious virus and that it was coming to our country and knowing what communities always are the most vulnerable when it comes to disease, it was my greatest fear realized. Absolutely.
You knew early on that Black and brown communities would be hit the hardest, and you have since launched a new campaign to specifically get information to those communities to try to reduce the risk of community spread in low-income communities and neighborhoods that are predominantly Black and brown. And it is called Not a Host. So tell me a bit about this campaign.
Absolutely. So I, like many other people in the Triangle and around the world, watched the news every day and saw the numbers continuing to rise and continuing to increase. And at the end of these press conferences or these meetings, you know, people would say, we need a way to communicate this information to the communities who are most disproportionately affected. And after a couple of weeks of that and hearing that statement, I said, I know plenty of talented and innovative people here in the area and around the country and the world for that matter, who can pull this together. And so I was drawn to just create something that was culturally relevant and outside of the box. And so that became Not a Host. And I have probably talked to every person you do and do not know here in the Triangle in terms of leveraging resources and access to communities to make sure that they get this messaging. So we have four pretty simple goals. The first is that there is a lot we don't know about this virus, but what we do know is that we don't want you to have it. And so when you see these messages about basically reducing your risk, this is what people mean. The second one is that we want to be very, very clear that this is not a race issue. This is a racism issue. Systemic and structural racism has gotten us to this place and space today in 2020 because of the places and neighborhoods in which people live. So we want to say, we see you. We understand that this is an equity issue. The third thing, Anita, is that we really want to honor the frontline workers who wake up every day and make sure that we have our paper towels, that we have our soap, that we have our toilet paper and our water. We know that they come from the very communities oftentimes that are most disproportionately affected by disease. And we want to be able to create a community in which people can celebrate their friends, their family, who get up every morning to make sure that we have what we need. And the fourth part, Anita, we know in public health, and I've been honored to have so many amazing people in what I call the dream team, from epidemiologists to community psychologists to psychologists, and they made it very clear to me at the onset, if you tell people they can't do something, you have to provide an alternative and say, well, you can do this. So part of us developing this campaign and this community is saying, well, yeah, you should not be doing this right now. Or when we tell you to stand 6 feet away, these are some things that you could do. If you have access to the internet, here are some virtual things that you can do. If you don't have access to internet, we are developing a print campaign, and these are some things that you can also do. So those are our four overarching goals. We have worked on this for quite some time, and like many people around the world, we've had, oh my gosh, so many things COVID-related and unrelated That continue to shape the work that we do. But yeah, Anita, that's what I'm really excited to share. And
well, could you maybe give us some specifics? Because I think we hear the term, you know, culturally relevant or culturally sensitive programming, and it's hard to envision exactly what that means. You know, North Carolina's messaging is focused on the three W's: where, where, wait, where, and wash. There we go. It's in the back of my head somewhere. So talk about, you know, how your messaging is different from something like a three W's. What does it mean to have culturally specific and relevant information? And what does that look like specifically?
Well, three W's is part of our work, right? So we want to be able to send people to these places and spaces to make sure that they have the information. So part of our campaign with the entire Not a Host campaign is, this is the host that you know. Right. We all know the person who says, let's fire up the grill, or I have the meat, you bring the drinks, or we're going to the pool. You are hosting an event. So we wanted to anchor in a term that was relevant. And we're in the midst of a global pandemic right now. So if you can just hold off on that for a second, we use terms that are the demographic we're looking at with this particular campaign online is 25 to 64. We're used to terminology like, nah, I'm not going to come through today, or like, nah, I'm going to wait this one out, or nah, I'll see you guys maybe in 2021. So that's what I mean when I say culturally relevant. And the other piece of that was, well, this is the host you don't know. And so when you're watching the press conferences and people say you're asymptomatic, or they're talking about case fatality rate, or all these, to me, higher level public health terms, this is what they mean. You can host this virus, or if you want to call it a vector, that's fine as well. You can host this virus in your body and have zero clue that you have it. This is what they mean when they say asymptomatic. And so this is a bridge and a link for us to say, this is why you need to wash your hands. This is why you need to wear your mask. And this is why you need to wait. But part of us even developing this brand community, or this community, is really leveraging the gifts of so many people in the community to contribute, from even the terminology like nah to how they celebrate community hosts. So this is certainly not a replacement of, but a connection to.
Okay.
I, as a public health person, quote, educated, Anita, it was challenging to navigate from the World Health Organization website to the CDC website to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. Excellent information. But I thought to myself, how is a layperson navigating all of this?
How about accessibility?
That's what I mean.
How about accessibility? I mean, you mentioned obviously the importance of using terminology that's understandable, using cultural references to the advantage of the campaign, and using things that people understand and translating those. But how about accessibility? How accessible are, you know, the governor's press conferences and the ways that some of this information is coming out to folks, and especially those folks who are most most vulnerable?
So kudos to our leaders who have acknowledged these vulnerable communities who do not have the privileges and the access that we have daily when we wake up and jump on our laptops and our telephones. That's part of our translation of this information from digital platform to print. And as I mentioned to you earlier, if you mention a person in the community, we have probably reached out to them in order to provide print information for these vulnerable communities. So that was part of our broad campaign with this same demographic of being able to translate this into information that can be inserted at the local food pantry where you're getting your food, or with the faith community when you are engaging with your church, whether virtual or online, or if there's outreach at your church that we are leveraging those partnerships and those resources. Our goal is not to reinvent the wheel. Our goal is to really enhance and amplify what's happening.
Okay, so putting information in spaces where people are, and finding ways to access people who may not have the internet or who may not be able to get access to those teleconferences and that kind of thing. I'd love to close on, so I mean, we talked about you as a strategist and a scholar, but you are also a teacher, and you are going to be teaching a public health course at UNC Chapel Hill this fall. How are you using this moment to inspire how you think about educating the next generation of public health experts and trainees?
Great question. So I would like to, of course, honor and celebrate Dr. Dana Rice, who brought me in to be adjunct instructor for the Public Health Leadership Program. Her course is about conceptualizing public health solutions, Anita. So it is bringing everything you read in your textbook to life. And what better moment than now than to really help people understand how data translates to policy, how data translates to programs, and how we really make substantive and meaningful change. So I'm excited to work with her this fall and continue to have these discussions with students to really challenge their thinking about how do these things connect from what you're reading to the data you connect to implementation to policy. What are some of the barriers we can anticipate, and what are some of the things that we can be innovative with framing, with developing programs? So this is a huge moment in time for the students coming in this fall to really learn how to bring these things to life. So I'm excited to be back at UNC again this fall.
Bobbi Banks is a leadership strategist and the CEO of Pillar Consulting, and you can find more about her campaign, Not a Host, at our website, stateofthings.org. Bobbi, thanks so much.
Thank you, Anita. It's been great. Thank you.
You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.